Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, Primates! You found Primus Trax. Congratulations! At Primus Trax on Instagram and Twitter. Primus Trax Pod at gmail.com is the email address. I am Josh, and there's really only one Frankie, and he's here today.
Hi, Josh.
But I really want to be like today's guest. He's an incredibly talented bassist. You may have seen his Primus playthroughs on YouTube, among other bands, or his band Parasite. They are awesome. We are thrilled to welcome Kale Gonzalez to Primus Trax. Welcome, pal.
Welcome to me. Thank you. You know, I was telling you, I'm a fan, so I'm really happy to be here, finally.
I couldn't
Thank
be happier.
Thank you so much for joining us, KO. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Frankie. It'll be interesting once I hear this one with my voice in it.
It's really great you're here. You're going to help us break down Lee Van Cleef. We should get to know you a little bit, and we do this every time we expand the Primus Trax family and have somebody new on. I usually ask my first question, which is, KO, what was your path to Primus?
I don't know if Frankie remembers, but it was a time in Mexico where you only had one or two channels, right, on TV. I remember they had open just TV Azteca. I don't know if you remember that, Frankie.
Yes, but, absolutely.
I remember they had Tommy the Cat as one of the songs that they used to change from program to from a program to a different program. I didn't know it was Primus, but I was like,
oh, I
that's
remember
really
that.
Cool.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know how old you were then, Frankie, but that must have been somewhere around 93, 94. Were you born?
I didn't watch that channel at that particular time, but I do recall the same thing happening in Univision. They would also sample Tommy the Cat between shows.
Then I didn't know that was Primus, but I had started playing bass. So, I mean, that's why I kind of got hooked into the song. And eventually, I bumped into Primus, and my first album was Frizzle Fry.
Oh, very good.
Right. I remember buying that CD along with Suck on This at a local CD store, which was really, really rare because, I mean, I'm from Mazatlan, so it's not even a big city. Uh-huh. And back then, it was strange just finding any CDs of any sort. So I'm talking 94. Finding two Primus, and those were the Caroline edition CDs, right? So finding those CDs back then, it was pretty weird. So that was, I guess, my full-on introduction to Primus. And that's, again, I was starting to play bass, so I full-on started just learning to play Frizzle Fry, right?
Now, were you learning by ear?
Back then, we had no YouTube, right? So and there was no way of, our web, but just FTPs and downloading text files. That was it, right? So I actually remember downloading tabs on text files for some Primus songs on those albums.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So I started learning the Claypool lingo on bass that way, right? But the reality, I had never saw Les play, you know? I was kind of emulating what he was doing through listening to the songs and watching at those text tabs.
There's always some doubt as to the accuracy of those tabs as well. I think Primus is notorious for the tabs being very poor.
Absolutely. And the good thing is I'm mostly self-taught. I had a friend that was really good on guitar, and I guess the best lesson I got from him was learning songs by ear, the lesson he gave me. By then, I was not afraid of obviously using the tabs as reference, but then I could figure out those were wrong. But I had a starting point, right?
That's what they're useful for, I think, is you can get the general idea if it's not completely inaccurate.
If you want to play Primus, the main thing you want to learn is the strum and thumb technique, right?
Right.
And so that was when I kind of learned to do, right? Particularly with that album, which has a lot of strumming. I know Les doesn't like the slap term, So the
thump and pluck, yeah.
And the plucking and all that. So
how difficult is that without actually seeing his right hand in action to emulate that?
It was all about mechanics. He had to flow. I mean, if I'm going downwards and I just need to use mechanics in my favor, right? I mean, I need to be able to navigate through the riff in a way that it makes sense. After a couple of decades that I actually started paying attention to how he was playing him, I noticed I was actually doing more motions than he is.
Wow.
Even though, I mean, I was looking through the mechanics, but the reality is that my influence mesh made a mess of how I played those songs. When I started paying more attention to how Les plays his songs and talking to people that are close to him, I learned that he's actually very much into the most with less movements. I was definitely not doing that. But for me, it works because, you know, there's an article and they were talking about, and I mean, we were just having that conversation, Josh, before Frankie, you came, and we're talking about cover songs, right?
Right.
And we all learn by covering the music we like, the musicians that we admire. And Neil was talking about that. It's good that we do that. What's not cool is that you copy one, right?
So, right.
And there's, Neil was a man of words, and he obviously said it much better than I will. But the reality is, he finishes that interview saying, it's a great way to build a vocabulary. It's a great way to learn composition, technique, and the such. And he finishes saying, I copied hundreds, you know, by saying my voice, my uniqueness comes from copying as many drummers as I could. Les Claypool is definitely a big, big influence on my playing. It's not the only one. So there will definitely be some similarities, but some of the other bass players will make a mess of my technique once I play Claypool songs.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at your list here on your YouTube channel. And by the way, do yourself a favor. Go to YouTube and search for K.O. Gonzalez. That's K-E-L-L-O. Gonzalez. It's the old AA that throws off English speakers when they're learning Spanish. But not your fault. I don't think you named yourself. But when I look through this list of your covers, and you said you play the music you love, I see Megadeth, Metallica, Rage Against the Machine, Pantera, Tool, Pearl Jam, System of a Down, some Mudvayne in there, Primus, of course, Molotov. I love Molotov, by the way. Dancing Dense Denso is one of the greatest albums ever created.
Yes.
You know, Alice in Chains, I think might have already said Soundgarden, but when I look through this list, Infectious Grooves, I keep just reading them. Rush, I'm seeing all these different influences. All of these things are informing your playing. So I'm curious with your band, Parasite, and of course, it's a Primus podcast, so I'm going to go there. How does Primus seep into your band's work, do you think?
If I were to not think about what to play, how to play it, and just come up with something, that would Parasite, you know, because that's, I guess, my playing in the wild, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What happens sometimes when you're in a band is normally a band already has some sort of last name to it. I mean, you know what I mean? It already has or is within a certain genre, or it's
right.
Oh, this is a band that we play a hard rock, gothic, industrial metal, you know, and
right.
That's it.
So they've already labeled
themselves,
yeah.
Whatever doesn't fit the mold, it's outside of it.
Yeah.
You'll discard it. But with Paras, it's the reality is everything plays. So all my influences come in play, and I can use any of the toolbox that I have in regards to influences and some sound. I keep thinking, for my sound in Parasite, I use my Carole Thompson basses. That's where I use them.
I think Primus fans are going to be very encouraged to hear that.
I use my tremolos. I use my six-string fretless. I use all of that there, right? It doesn't particularly, I think, sound like Les because, I also use a lot of effects. And I guess Les, if you see how he has been evolving his sound as well, he has started collecting his share of guitar effects as well. So
I didn't hear much envelope filter on the record I listened to.
Yes. But I guess the similarities is I use a lot of slap, I strum, solo, I do a lot of things. And it's instrumental trio. So since there's no vocals, the music speaks for for us or on our behalf, right? So there, we take turns being the, I guess, the speaker of the song or in, or of the segments of the song. Even though I have, I may have those hundreds of bass player influences, the top five are the ones that probably pop up the most, and Les is obviously one of them.
We've been talking about your band, so I'm going to say it now, and I'm going to say it later. Parasite, you can find their music on Bandcamp, parasitemx.bandcamp.com. That spelling is parasitemx.bandcamp.com. Pretty good stuff. I listened to the Paradigm Paralysis record, and man, it's a lot of fun. Frankie, you went to a Parasite show. How was it?
Well, let me tell you, Josh, that my experience with Kejo was a very interesting, I'm very progressive situation, because it all started one day when I think I was looking up covers on YouTube, and I saw one of Kejo's videos in the thumbnail. The first thing that came to my mind was, wow, who is this Nordic guy doing Primus covers? And then I clicked on it, and I was absolutely blown away by his technique, his tone, his presence, you know, because he's sitting down on a couch at his home playing bass, but even still, you know, he has so much presence playing his instrument. It's just compelling. Not just his playing, his image, everything about Kejo is really impressive. Nice. And then I started reading the comments, and I noticed that he was replying to some people in Spanish. And I was like, wow, where is this guy from? I mean, who is this guy? And I did some research, and I discovered that he was from Mexico, and I was speechless. I mean, up until that point, I don't think I have met anyone that truly got Primus in the way that Kejo does. You know, that they don't listen to just the same few tracks all the time, but actually dig deep into the catalog, because if you look at the list of covers that Kejo has played, I mean, he can play hits, but he has also dug deep into the catalog. So right. I knew I was looking at a real fan. I sent him a friend request on Facebook, and he accepted.
Oh, Kejo, what were you thinking?
I think that's when I could still accept people on Facebook.
So yeah, I was lucky. I got in there in time. I mean, I just said, wow, you're amazing. I just discovered your videos. And we didn't interact that much after that. But when Primus announced their shows in Mexico in 2019, and then they announced that they were coming to Guadalajara, of course, I got my ticket right away. And then I sent a message to Kejo. It was kind of a shot in the dark at that point. I didn't know how he was going to react. But I said, hey, when it's the day of the show, would you like to hang out before the show? Because I have never been in Guadalajara, and it would be cool to spend time with someone.
Yeah.
To my surprise, he said yes. So we got in touch by phone. The day of the show was absolutely incredible, not just because the concert was fantastic, but also I think just hanging out with Kejo just made the whole experience so much more memorable than it would have been if I had been there on my own. You know, yeah. I had a really fantastic time with him. When you see his videos, when you listen to his music, you might form an idea about him in your mind. But when you spend time with him, I mean, he's one of the coolest people, most humble, funniest I have ever met. I had a really, really fantastic time with Kejo.
Excellent.
And A few months later,
yes.
Yeah, a few months later, he played a show in Mexico City, and I was there.
Ah.
And it was mind-blowing to see the band performing live, because you have three musicians that are extremely accomplished and, you know, very virtuous in their corresponding instruments. But again, I mean, just looking at Kejo on stage, he commands all your attention. So every now and then I was looking at what the guitar player was doing or what the drummer was doing. But most of the show, my eyes were fixed on Kejo, because, I mean, he is the show in and on itself.
I have to thank Frank. Yeah. I'm not sponsoring that message. I just want to make that clear.
Well, that's very, yes, absolutely. I do imagine, though, you are commanding the stage, you know, swinging that hair around, you know, you got the bases, and you're making it happen and putting yourself up front. Frankie, did you get jostled at all that show? I mean, the music's pretty heavy.
I was headbanging through and through.
Well, with that kind of endorsement, KO, you're going to have people knocking down your door anytime they're in Guadalajara. So be prepared for that.
I'll have to be, yeah. But now, to compliment Frankie's trip to Guadalajara, he invited me to be around and try to get a peek out of the band.
Of course.
Which yes. He did, you know, which yeah. He did. But I was like, no, I'll meet you at the theater.
Oh.
I'll meet you at the theater. And then once we met at the theater, he told me the whole story. You know what? I was here since 10 a.m. and I was just looking through and the bus came in and they went into the theater and I got a picture and then I went to the hotel and there they were again. So
that's so me.
I heard the full story.
He's a hound for that stuff. If you hang around Frankie, you're going to meet the band eventually. It sounds like that's the kind of experience I want to have at a Primus show. I want to be standing next to somebody who's knowledgeable and we can just kind of go back and forth, you know, talking about our observations or oh, he just did this and he doesn't normally do that. And, you know, or as opposed to being next to the guy that's just going, woo, which is there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm not that kind of guy. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. It sounds like you've got quite a grounding. So I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say about Lee Van Cleef. Lee Van Cleef, what, track 8? Right, you corrected me last week, so Frankie, so now we're on track 8 of Greed and Augahyde. This is 3 minutes 28 seconds, music and lyrics by Claypool, as credited on the album. They also played this one live on Jimmy Fallon, I believe. Not that I watched it, but...
That's right.
And there was also an interesting music video for this one, but... Frankie, you're the encyclopedia, so I should turn it over to you.
All right, Josh. Lee Van Cleef, you know, it's got a very interesting life history because it was actually teased on December 30th, 2010, prior to the New Year's Eve show in Oakland. Wow. Just teased. They didn't perform the song. And it wouldn't be until June 3rd, 2011, that they actually performed the song live for the first time at the Hard Rock Live in Orlando. So from 2011 all the way until the present, Lee Van Cleef has been on pretty heavy rotation throughout the sets. There was actually a point in time where it became a mainstay together with Over the Falls, and then it got switched up a bit, and then you would get it at random spots during the sets. But you can definitely tell that it's one of Les Claypool's favorite songs on the albums and that he really enjoys playing the song live because it has become a live certainty. Curiously enough, you would imagine that Duo the Twang would have performed the song a lot. But the truth is that they never did, which I find quite strange.
I would think that this would have been the impetus for Les to start Duo the Twang based on... you know, how the song goes. So that is interesting.
It could have been that it was too obvious, you know?
It could be, yeah.
Very well could be.
Could have. I also was reading that, I mean, you obviously know Les playing at home, recording riffs. And apparently this is one of them. This is one of the riffs that stuck as he was playing his dobro on home.
Absolutely.
It has, I mean, if you look at the lyrics, Frank, you'll probably cover this later, but if you look at the lyrics, it goes along with the music pretty well because this is a Western type country type riff.
Agreed.
Right? I mean, it's a very simple song. It has two riffs and that's it. It revolves about this kind of country type riff. Me being a musician, being a bass player, some instruments will make you play a certain way. And I can see how Les would kind of gravitate towards this type of riffs playing the dobro, you know?
Oh, that's
I can
a good
see
point.
Him playing yeah. those riffs with the dobro, right?
And it has to do with the resonance, the clankiness, just the overall sound of that dobro. I think it lends to that
yeah.
Western influence for sure. And it's the one that it seems like he keeps it on the tour bus so he can pull it out and play whenever. He had it in the house. When he was on Primus tracks, he just, you know, Soya said, you got to play Tommy the Cat. And all of a sudden, he just reached over and grabbed the dobro and I was shocked. To me, it does scream country and Western. KO, I think you're spot on. I think it all starts with that dobro.
He's a spot on. I got a couple of quotes for you to compliment what he said. Les Claypool said, sometimes I'll have a lyric or I'll get a line stuck in my head and start building around that. Sometimes it's a bass part. Live and Cliff was me sitting around with my dobro just twanging away, and I came up with that lick, and I really liked it. I had this notion of wanting to write something about Live and Cliff, and I just stuck the two things together. And the other quote is, a yellow Studebaker with a 302 with a seat of green Naga hide. It refers to a form of plastic leather used for seats. That was my father's pickup truck when I was a kid. Years later, I actually ran that pickup truck into the side of a liquor store because the driver's door flew open as I was making a right turn. The old Studebaker is no longer with us, but there were a lot of fond memories in that vehicle. I come from a long line of mechanics, and Naga hide was what people had on their couches because they couldn't afford leather. The circles I ran in, we saw a lot of Naga hide, the 70s working class leather. And in the Electric Grapevine book, Les refers to Lee Van Cleef as a song about his youth.
Yeah, and we see it in the lyrics here. So it is autobiographical, the anecdote about crashing the truck, for one. And there's the a few more dents in his pride line right there. I'd forgotten about that. So we have him marrying these memories or these useful memories with this idea of loving these movies that had Lee Van Cleef in them. And Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef were often paired as protagonist, antagonist in a whole lot of Westerns. Many of them still quite famous, and I will confess, I've seen very few of them, and I don't think I can name any right now. It wasn't on the menu when I was a kid.
Nope. Not in Mexico, no.
No, they didn't make it down there very often, I imagine. I'm kind of in the dark on Lee to a degree, but we really got to see these ideas on display when Les and his son made that little promo video for those EMG pickups, those gold EMG pickups, that spaghetti Western style. That stuck with Les throughout the years because when you look at the cinematography and lighting and so on and so forth, production values with that little video, it screams Western, of course. Spaghetti Western, as one might say.
I don't know too much, but what I've learned from Lee Van Cleef is that he was like the antithesis of Clint Eastwood, right? I mean, he was like the unknown star in the spaghetti westerns, right? So like the unsung hero. The antagonist, I mean, for what I see, and I think that's also a quote that I read somewhere, his facial features, I mean, they mostly made him a villain.
And that's what I see in pictures of him, that nose, that narrow nose, and those the way his eyes are set. He's an intimidating-looking guy, and he kind of gets that sneer, too. He kind of had that pencil mustache, which I've been trying to go for years, and I don't know how, so I just grow a full one. But it's on him, it looks great. Yeah. He looks the part. He just looks like a bad guy in a lot of those films. Kind of a scary-looking bad guy, but just perfect, I think, for that role opposite Clint, who was the hero. And of course everybody wants to be Clint. He's the good guy. He's the hero. He wins the day. It's very, and I draw parallels myself, at least with this lyric of everybody wants to be like Clint, but I wanted to be Lee Van Cleef. Les has said numerous times throughout his career, everybody wanted to be Eddie Van Halen. I wanted to be somebody else. And I picked up the bass. There's some parallels there throughout his life that he wanted to be a little left of center. He wanted to be in the picture like Lee was, but he wanted to be the guy that not everybody chose, or he wanted to choose the things that not everybody would choose, it seems. So,
and I can relate to that in a way that, I mean, Les is a very creative person, right? I mean, so he doesn't want to be one among the herd. He wants to be separated from that. He wants to lead his own thing.
Yeah.
Right. The following what most people are doing, I don't think that goes with him.
Right. He's a very individualistic person and has a very authentic voice. So why limit himself? And I think we've seen that, you know, for the last 35 years. Well, you have that bass in your lap there, KO. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know it sounds great since we did a sound check. And can you kind of walk us through what we're dealing with here?
Green Naga hide, I think for most of us that really like Primus, it was a really nice surprise to have a full album.
For sure.
After a while, right? And we didn't have Tim, but it was Primus. And I remember listening to that album, and it was like, I hear different sounds from Les. I mean, I was like, he cooked up something different here. So as I started looking, I remember seeing Tragedies Are Coming. If I remember correctly, he had the dobro in that video. right? I think.
Yes.
So I was like, so that's it, right? So he cooked up a new bass, but I started looking around and I saw and actually found the bass that he's using. He actually got it, I believe. I don't remember the full name, but it's a Kelly, something Kelly. And those don't come with a pickup. So he had a pickup installed to it. Those basses are no longer to be found anymore. Obviously, probably the few ones that were out there, fans just got them.
Yeah.
Like myself. I would have done that. I said, you know what? I want a resonator bass. I mean, I want that sound. You know, I was able to find this. It's probably a mid-range type instrument. It's not the high-end thing. But what I like about this one is it's a resonator. It's a metal body.
Oh, okay.
It's heavy as it can be, right? But it's very solid. And I when I got it, I could see why Les would use this to play instead of just a regular acoustic bass. And what happens is these resonator basses are really solid. I mean, if you thumb plug, strum, or do anything to an acoustic bass, it'll cry, you know? It'll let you know it doesn't like to be played that way.
Okay.
But with this one, I mean, you'll do all that and it'll like it. It'll give you sounds that we can do something with. So that's the first thing that I noticed when I started playing the resso with. I mean, and just slapping, strumming, and just doing things with. A funny thing is that, you know, when someone, you know, gets Les Paul guitar, they start playing Sweet Child of Mine, or they get a Strat, they start playing Another Brick in the Wall, things like that. And you know how some instruments that relate you to some songs? Well, right. I got this bass, and I didn't know the song, but the first thing I did was... That's the first thing I played, because I was like, you know, that's what you play on this. It wasn't probably until a year and a half ago that someone approached me and said, you know what, let's do a Primus song, a collaborative. You know, that was the lockdown, I guess, thing to do. Let's collaborate on a video.
Right.
So someone approached me and said, let's collaborate on a Primus cover song. Which song do you want to do? And they started saying songs that I had already done, you know, and I was like, no, I don't want to repeat the song that I already did.
Yeah.
So they wanted to do, for some reason, they wanted to do a song from Geet Nullahide. So I was like, okay, let's do Lee Van Cleef. I have the dobro. Let's just do that one. So we recorded that one. It wasn't until I was going to do that video that I actually sat down to learn the song. You know, I only kind of just jammed on the main riff. But I hadn't really sat down to see how it was actually, I mean, how the full song was done, or how I even played the riff correctly, you know. It's a relatively simple riff, but it's, I mean, as all things Les, has its tricks to play it well. The easy part, which is, I guess, the verse portion of the song, that's the Western theme. Right?
Definitely.
Because it just goes like... Just going, you'll hear that in all Western songs. Or a different, like I don't know if you've heard this Stuart Hamm Western tapping solo. He goes.
Right, yeah, that kind of pattern. Yeah, I hear it
that's,
in there.
That's the kind of thing, right?
Right.
This one's just slower, just with more twang, as Les says.
Yeah.
Now, the tricky portion of the song is the main riff. If you want to play it well, I mean, the bends are the killers. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that part, the... That bend is it's make or break.
You have to get that one just right.
And now imagine he's doing that while he sings.
Right. So. Yeah. And so you being in an instrumental trio, it must be a relief that you don't have to sing while doing this kind of thing.
Yes. But again, I hope I could. I've been able to learn from really particular bass players. You know, Les is obviously one of the ones that I soaked my creativity in as I was learning to play bass. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Frankie said it. The reality is, as I started, I went full in to Primus, right? So I went full in to learn the songs, to learn the techniques, even though I may play it different. But I really dug into as much of the music as I could, right? So I started with Frizzle Fry, Suck on This, and then Sailing Seas of Cheese, and then obviously Pork Soda. Just, I mean, that was, everyone knew Primus by then, I guess, just because of My Name is Mud. And as when I mean, the reality is that album was out already when I was kind of navigating through my learning process of Primus. Then obviously the darkest pieces like Miscellaneous Debris, and I remember loving the tone, the quality of the tonal quality on the bass, even though it sounds like crap on that album particularly. But I was like, it must be really difficult to make it sound that way, you know? I mean, I mean, how do you make it sound so crappy and still be so cool, you know? And then I was already a Primus freak when Tales from the Punch Bowl came out. So I was able to buy that off the shelf. And then I was lucky enough that I spent a year as an exchange student in Philadelphia. And I got to see Primus live for the first time. Awesome. I believe, if I remember the name of the venue correctly, was the Electric Factory in Philadelphia.
Yep.
In 1996.
Very nice.
So that was my first show. I think it's probably the only show that I've attended where 2 days later I was still trying to gather my hearing back.
Uh-huh. Oh, you know, that tour was loud.
Too loud.
Yes. Yes.
It was loud. And the thing is, you know, I was all the way in the front, in front of Les, but I don't know why they had a speaker pointing to the crowd.
Oh, from the stage?
Right in front of me.
Weird.
Yes. So that kind of contributed to that ringing I was hearing for the next couple of days. But
that's a good
that
ringing,
was a great concert.
I want to ask you, because you're talking about these 90s recordings, and then this one, like you said, he's bringing something different here. So the phrasing of the licks that he's playing, especially that main one, we've heard from more than one bass player who's been on that Les will, he'll kind of pack in the first couple of beats and then leave the next two open for improvisation. But with this one, and that's kind of a general thing he'll do, but with this one, it seems like a more complete lick. But then there's that bend in there, which you don't hear a lot. And there's this complete transition with that. It's just more of a complete or rounded piece in that regard. So
yeah, this song, and that's a good point, because as I was learning the song, it's a really basic structure. You know, it's really, I mean, you can tell the main riff, the verses, the bridges.
Yeah.
The chorus, and then the solos. The structure of the song, it's makes total sense. You know, he's not, he didn't go really weird on structure or anything open for improvisation, even live. I mean, they'll play it as it is,
right?
Probably the main reason for that is this is a song made to tell a story, guides you through. And the song is just a soundtrack of that story, you know? Mm-hmm. Even the solos, if you see where the solos are put and the length, because that's something that threw me off as I was playing the song, the length of the solos are not equal.
The first one is very brief. And the second is elongated.
And the other one's longer, but it's not, the length is not a common, just, okay, let's do some four bars and then come back. It's actually six, I think.
Oh.
I think that's the only piece where they probably played around with it. And I don't know if it was more like probably Larry saying, you know, I'm feeling this solo. Give me another bar, you know, something like that. It's definitely a storytelling song. And this country theme is the soundtrack of it.
When you say that, I think of Bob, because that music really enhances the story or helps tell the story as well. And it's pretty understated during the verses, and then the music carries it when there are not a lot of lyrics going on. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel that way about this one too. You know, thematically, they're very different, obviously, but I feel like they are similar or parallel in structure that way.
I agree with your agreement of the things that I'm agreeing.
Thank you for showing us the bass lick, because it sounds pretty tricky, and you use that word tricky, and it sounds tricky, but you were talking about that. We always say economy of motion for Tim Alexander, but I think I'm going to use the word efficiency for Les, because you said you were doing more than you needed to as far as movement.
I've actually relearned some Primus Les licks now that I know how he plays them, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some songs that I haven't played just because I want to relearn them to play correctly.
Okay.
And I think you were going there. What Les does is this. And,
yeah.
And he does a lot of up and down, and he'll use the up and down.
Yeah.
He'll use the up and down. And the way I learned is I did all down. I mean, I got it, but then I learned that for some things, it sounds different, you know?
Right.
Can you, what would Leave and Cleef sound like on the Pachyderm? Would it work if Les tried to play it on a different bass other than a dobro?
Is that a challenge?
No, it's just a question.
you can definitely play it, but the twanginess would not be there. That's the only thing. It's like even Les. I mean, I've done it with some of my songs, and I know Les has done it more than once. I mean, he plays Tommy the Cat on a four string, or he'll play Under the Falls with even with the dobro,
right?
Or things like that, right? So he can transpose play the same licks on a different bass. It's still Les. It'll work. But particularly, I think this song needs the dobro just because of that twang, that Western feel, and you can pretty much play it, and no one will complain, and no one will say, hey, I'm missing the twang, you know. it's just us that know about it, right? But the reality is that, I mean, it would work.
Okay. I think it pairs really well with that Fender tone, that clean Fender tone that Larry was using for Over the Falls and Lee Van Cleef, especially live, but definitely on the studio version of Cleef as well. You don't have heavy distortion in country Western music. So Larry going clean makes sense to complement what Les is doing. And it's very stop-start. And that was something I wanted to ask you about too, is you were showing us the down and up strokes with the right hand, but with the left hand, you're not changing position too much. So there's a lot of efficiency with the left hand as well. And then,
right,
you know, Larry is mostly, it sounds like upstrokes. It sounds like, you know, we talk about him skanking all the time. But this tune has such a bounce, and I think it's a wonderful combo of that bass lick with Jay doing the J-ski hop, as we call it. When I do this, that means this is Jay Lane murdering a hi-hat. That's what this motion means. And but Larry says, map, map, map. Matt, it's a really cool contrast or counterpoint to what Les is doing, because you were talking about the bum, 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 Les Claypool style, but Larry's hitting those, it's just a great
counter. He's playing on the muted, right?
Okay, so, yeah. Yeah.
There he is,
yeah.
Right?
Right. Right, so it just seems to work really well together. What's cool about that is Larry's kind of flipping it on us. When he's skanking, it's usually during a verse, but I think he's doing some unison chords during the verse. And then this time during the musical chorus, or I guess the actual chorus, that's when he's giving us those upstrokes. And it's kind of cool that way, because he flips it. He's playing a great support role there.
And the thing is, you know, when you play for so long with someone, I think Larry understands Les riffs very much. Mm-hmm. And his role is to complement what he's playing. And as we know, how most of Primal songs will come to be is Les will come with the song. So most of the riffing is on the bass. So Larry will need to fill in the gaps, complement, see where he probably will play along. But in most cases, he'll kind of go into the cracks of Les riffs, right? Yeah.
And with this one, there aren't that many cracks, because even though it's a stop-start bass riff, it is taking up a lot of the sonic space. So, you know, Larry's just finding those teeny
but
little...
But the good thing, it's following the Western formula.
Yes.
Right? That's the nice thing about this song. He's following the Western music formula. So, I mean, there's a no-brainer, I think, for him to just complement and help the atmosphere of the song.
Yeah. I'm going to give you guys a hot take. I think this tune would work really well on Ween's 12 Golden Country Greats.
I'll agree.
We're going to get a lot of flack for that one. Sorry, KO. Well, it's, yeah, so the stringed instruments are working really well together. And then I want to point to Jay Lane, because that hop is just, the hop that he has is just so perfect for this tune. If you listen closely to Jay Lane on this track, I think, as a drummer, it just seems like you'll learn how to use space really well and how to hop, how to get a lot of hi-hat accents in, as opposed to just playing it straight. Because he could just do, you know, just 1, 2, 3, 4, but he's giving us so much more. And that was when I watched the Fallon performance, when the camera was actually on him. He just does so much work, and it's so quiet because it's usually on a closed hi-hat. With very minimal opening. All these Green Dog Hide tracks, I really want to just point out how much Jay is actually doing that the casual ear may not catch.
And mostly on the hi-hat.
You know, he's not banging on those floor toms and doing those Tim Alexander things.
If you listen to Tim's Frizzle Fried drum parts, you'll hear Jay's influence, particularly on the hi-hats.
Absolutely. There's a lot of it on that record. That's a great point, because, you know, you hear Jay and then you hear Tim and you think these guys don't play anything alike. But if you go back to that first record, which Jay Lane wrote the drum lines from any of those tracks, I think Tim is feeling that influence on a track like To Defy the Laws of Tradition. You hear some really nice hi-hat work, Putting Time, of course. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. So that's a great point. There is that marriage on that record of what Jay was doing and when Tim came in.
Yep.
And I can't help but listen to these songs and CJ in my mind's eye, CJ behind the kit with just a big goofy smile on his face while he's playing. And so all these songs are just joyous to me in that regard. And it's all me imagining Jay Lane smiling. Actually, Frankie, I want to ask you this. I have Lee fatigue, and I wonder if you do too. And it has to do with the numerous live performances and how it's paired with Over the Falls. And the hardcore fans started calling it Over the Cleef and saying, oh, I got over the cleefed last night, because they heard it just was performed so often back to back like that. So much so that there was a set list doodle of Les's in which Brad Sands, I think, is showing him a laptop and Les has a tear running down his cheek and he's saying, they don't want to hear Lee Van Cleef anymore or something like that. Word got to him that the fans weren't too excited to hear Falls and Cleef back to back every night. So I had Lee fatigue after a while. There is a show gap of 111 shows. That's probably around the time Les got the message from 2018 to 2021. And there was also about a 50 show gap in 2018. So somewhere in 2018, he got that word and he shelved it for a while. So they do listen. I'm curious about you, Frankie. I don't know if you got Lee fatigue or how you received this one.
Of course. I mean, if I'm listening to a show, I don't mind Lee Van Cleef being part of the set. If I traveled to see a show, I gotta say it would be a little disappointing to have a good chunk of the set list devoted to Over the Cleef, because I have seen both songs performed live heavily. I would say that it depends on the context whether I experience the Lee fatigue or not. But I do want to point out that there is one thing that I enjoy a lot about the live renditions, and it's that part near the ending where it's just drums and vocals. It's wonderful.
The bottom drops out with the repetition of, right, whatever happened to Lee Van Cleef, don't forget about Lee and that sort of thing. And it's just drums and vocals. Yeah, that's what I appreciate about the live version. And in fact, listening to the studio version today in preparation for this for the first time in I don't know how long, when it didn't happen, I actually paused and looked at the stereo and thought, what's going on here? Because I'd forgotten about it after hearing it live so many times. I do think it is really upbeat on the record, and I think it's welcome. And I think it was a good idea to do a video for this one. Why not? I remember Les saying in an interview, he said, we got a little bump from that video for that song. So they got some interest and got to go on the Tonight Show. So it worked out, but boy, they played it a lot live. That's all I'll say. I don't hate it, but I might actually sit down during a Primus show if I hear it. Stunned gasps from the audience.
What I've noticed on the shows that I've been and the ones I've heard or seen on the web is that the Green Nagahide songs live are normally either slow or really atmospheric. You know, they're really open.
Oh, so yeah.
It's an interesting experience hearing them or seeing them live. So I can relate to, whoever would have seen on a 20 plus shows when they get there, I imagine that that would be the bathroom break, right?
yeah. Well, I'm going to see them in about a week and a half here. So if I can't hold it, I got to pick my song. We'll figure out which one it is. You know, well, at least there's an intermission on the Tribute to Kings, actually, so I can hold it till then. Let's talk about the vocals and the lyrics a little bit more. I actually, listening to it in the car stereo, like I said today, I found that bullet mic to be kind of muddy on this one. And I think it's because Les is delivering the lyrics in a really low register when he's got a glass red rider, blah, 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 right? I don't even remember the lyrics because it's kind of difficult to decipher, especially on first listen, so it's a good thing they printed a lyric book. Frankie, I'm on record as saying repetition is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with repetition. But let me give you some numbers. As the lyrics are printed in this track, Les says Clint 16 times and Lee 19 times. That's a lot. And part of it is because he's doing some self-rhymes with Clint or doing that repetition on purpose to compare and contrast them. As far as who likes them, and that is a lot of repetitions. I'm on the fence there, but we do get some autobiographical notes with the Red Ryder BB gun. And anybody listening, if you don't immediately think of the movie A Christmas Story, go watch it right now. You know, shooting birds out of the tree with the BB gun, the yellow Studebaker, which he eventually crashed. Thank you for that reminder, Frankie. Going to the drive-in to watch these movies. The line that is funny to me, though, is now the Studebaker's gone and Lee's passed on and Clint's still sharp as can be. I think these lyrics were written before Clint Eastwood, I think at the Oscars, talked to an empty chair for 5 minutes, turned some heads with that. I don't even remember what that was about, but it's been so long that it was a strange thing at the time. So you guys know what I'm talking about? I don't know if it made the news to you guys. It was a weird thing.
I don't remember that.
There you go. So Clint can do no wrong. Nobody cares. The lyrics, even though they're autobiographical, I think the repetition of everybody loves Clint, but I wanted to be Lee. Clint's great. Don't forget about Lee. The message gets home pretty early, but he comes back to it quite a bit. The lyrics are all right, you know, especially after listening to something like Jilly's, which musically, thematically, and everything else is radically different. This is a nice palate cleanser from something like Jilly's. But I'm ready to move on because it's short, sweet, to the point.
Do you remember what happens at the end of the music video?
Are you quizzing me? I like this. What I remember from the music video is they're going to have themselves a good old-fashioned duel there in the middle of the street. The hero. Yeah, you know who it is. Like, you know who it is even though he's in shadow, right?
Who it is for the how many times is his name repeated in the lyrics?
Right. They don't need to show you if you listen to the lyrics. I love that they're about to have their duel, and then Zombie Lee just approaches our hero and gobbles him up. That's what I remember. Am I missing anything?
No, that's right.
Yeah, I love that. I love that ending because he's
left so hanging.
Oh, right, that's right.
Upside
down. That's right. It's very funny. It's a great video. I love the animation style in the video too, and I think Zombie Lee looks fantastic. As far as the tune goes, that's about all I have to say. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
The vocals are sung that way and on purpose. I don't think Les would make them sound that way by accident. I think they're meant to be thus raspy and low, and it goes well. I mean, if you see how the whole production of the song, the composition, the mixing, it makes sense, you know?
I think you're onto something there, yeah, with that old Western vibe, for sure.
Yeah. Listen to Clint talk.
Right, yeah. You
know? He's down this, here.
They have this voice, you know?
No, that's a good point. Go ahead. I don't even remember what Lee sounds like either, but I remember what Clint sounds like, of course.
Zombie Lee.
Zombie Lee probably sounds fantastic. He's the one in the background going, ha, 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 hi.
There you go.
Before we talk about a couple of live cuts, I'm just going to share with you guys, once again, I don't know a ton about Lee Van Cleef, but a funny thing is when you do a Google search just for Lee Van Cleef, you get pictures, you get the Wikipedia entry, of course, and then you scroll down to the People Also Ask, and the first question is, what happened to Lee Van Cleef? It's so funny. There were a couple interesting things in the People Also Ask. Apparently, Lee had one blue eye and one green eye, and film producers thought that would be disturbing for viewers, so they gave him brown contacts. I actually would have kept him with the blue and the green to make him look even more menacing, I suppose.
But do you think that whatever happened to Lee Van Cleef came before the Primus song, or did that inspire Les to say that on the lyrics?
I honestly think it's just everybody knows that Clint's still around directing these films, winning awards. Whatever happened to Lee? You know, his foil in these movies. So I think it's a cool question. And if you're wondering, I think he died of a heart attack in 1989. And apparently he was missing like the tip of one of his fingers, so that made him look even scarier. All right, Frankie, should we do live versions? Should we impress KO with your repertoire? Hey, we're back to World Cafe. Let's listen to the intro.
This is Lee Van Cleef.
Pause. I think it's hilarious that he doesn't vocally answer the guy and just starts playing it. Oh, interesting.
Got a class red rider at Rocket Peak down in Ohio Creek.
Okay, that sounds so much clearer than on the record. So that low register, I agree. That's fine. I'm down with it there because there's space for it with that.
He actually stopped playing part of the verse riff.
Oh, did he?
He started singing. He'd stopped playing.
I was listening to Jay mostly, so I missed that because Jay was doing some cool stuff, and I thought I heard some double kick, or maybe he was embellishing with the floor tom, but. But I missed that. Good ear, KO. That's why you're here.
I can tell now then why he's playing it so much. This is the song he rests his thumb in.
He's cheating a little bit, right? He's getting a breather. Well, it sounds really good. I like that radio quality or that radio program quality. And it looks like for our second one, we only have two this week, even though it's been played 6,000 times. Frankie only gave us two. He gave us World Cafe, and we're going back to beautiful Papillion, Nebraska. 2015, so this is Tim Alexander on drums. Looks like we're going to get some Lurland. I was going to mention this earlier, but the way he plays that solo, and that's fairly true to the record, he really is taking advantage of the stop-start bass lick, and he's doing something similar with his phrasing on the solo, and I think that's really cool. He's leaving some space.
Again, I guess that's a signature for his playing and the way he dances around Les, right? I mean,
right.
He definitely complements without muddying what Les is doing, even on a solo. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's time to be on the spotlight. And even then, he's playing with the riff, you know? He's not just letting himself go nuts. He's being musical.
Yeah, I love that about him. He's a reluctant hero.
Reluctant hero of dissonant musicality.
I love that. I think we should get a business card for Lure that just says Reluctant Hero of Dissonant Music. All right, looks like we're going to get some outro with drums and vocals only. This is what you're talking about, Frankie. We get to see how it drops out at the end. That's a nice ending.
Yeah. It's also slower than the album. It does help the riff breathe much better. I can tell why they slow it down.
Just letting that breathe.
It's much easier.
The thing about it is it's only 3.5 minutes, and they don't stretch it out. Why do I have Lee fatigue? Primates, please cure me of Lee fatigue. PrimusTraxPod@gmail.com. At PrimusTrax on Instagram and Twitter. Help me. Lee Van Cleef. I think we found out what happened to you. You were tracked. K.O. Gonzalez, thank you so much for joining us. I am beside myself.
Thank you very much for the
invitation. Thank you so much, K.O.
No, thank you.
Once again, Parasite, really cool band. I recommend Paradigm Paralysis. That's just the first one I clicked on Bandcamp because it had a very attractive cover. So I tried that one. I love it. That's parazitemx.bandcamp.com, parazitemx.bandcamp.com. K.O. Gonzalez on YouTube, and where else can we find you, pal?
K.O. Gonzalez, Instagram. My Facebook's full, but you can find me there. Parasite, you can find Parasite pretty much in any streaming platform. If you want to send me a message, I think either Instagram or Facebook works. Follow my YouTube channel. My daughter wants that silver plaque, so
let's get you up there. Thanks again, K.O. Hey, Frankie. Next time, I just keep flipping the channels. There's got to be more on TV.
There's got to be more on TV than just more on TV, Josh.
K.O., your thumb's pretty strong. I'm gonna pass the remote to you because I'm already getting tired. Thanks, everybody. That's Lee Van Cleef. We'll see you next time. Later days.
Willie Mays. Whatever happened to Lee Van Cleef?
Don't forget about me. Wait a minute. K.O., Soya's not here. But there's one edict that we abide by on Primus Tracks, no matter what. If there's a bass player on, gotta play Tommy the Cat.
Okay.
Do it for Soya.
So I have to play Tommy the Cat.
On the dobro, no less.
That's
A++. Would demand again.
You had me up cold. I didn't warm up, so
I'll leave that on so everybody knows.